Dios. Going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, Dog Pound? Nathan Segura, happy to be back with you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea alongside my man, a very tan Matt Wilhelm.
The tag team is back.
The tag team is back here on another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We will connect with you fans, enhance the brand of the Browns, and focus on the fact that this team is committed to winning.
Committed to winning.
In the long haul. And we're going to do that talking about the draft, because that is the lifeblood of any successful organization over the long haul. You've got to be able to build and retain your talent through the draft. The Browns, 10 draft picks this season. Two in the first round, as you guys all know, and it will be a strategic offseason. I think the team, you know, what will they do in free agency? I don't know that they're going to do a whole lot. You know, it's interesting thinking about the guys that are out there from the team who will be back. It's going to be, when you think, take a long-term perspective and look at it, it's tough to see who exactly will be back. Maybe Buster Screen. I think Deshaun Gibson is a no-brainer, but other than that, I think it's going to be wide open. What are your thoughts on the Browns' free agencies, and what are your top three picks for the Browns? If you had to do the Browns' first two picks in the first round and their first pick in the second round, who do you like? Or if you aren't specific yet, what positions do you want to see the Browns address? Mel Kiper did his conference call today with the media, talking about, and talked a lot about the Browns, a lot of questions about the Browns, what they need to do at quarterback, what they should do at wide receiver, if that's the priority. Does he think offensive lines is as big of an issue as some other people? Mel Kiper, we will hear from him around 1:15. We'll also hear from Pete Prisco, CBS senior NFL correspondent, around 2 o'clock. Wrote an article about how absurd he thinks it is to give up on Johnny Manziel after six quarters. Do you agree or disagree? And then last night, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, was speaking to the Canton Chamber of Commerce and talked about this team, talked about Jimmy Haslam, and we got some interesting sound. We'll hear from him in the second hour there. Let me ask you this, because I think the biggest news story right now in the NFL is that the NFLPA has won their ruling. Judges overturned the decision on Adrian Peterson, his suspension. He will be reinstated. Now, of course, the league can appeal this, but this is a victory for the rule of law, due process, and fairness, says the NFLPA. So right now, if this goes, you've got Adrian Peterson back to the Vikings, where it seems things are rocky there. Reports of, you know, his agent getting into a fight with the Vikings. They're saying, my client will never play here. But today the ruling has come down, and you've got an opportunity. Adrian Peterson is back as of this ruling.
It is, and there's a couple different, very interesting points associated with it. And first and foremost, the one thing that I'd like to make is, in so many times when players in the NFL pay their NFLPA dues to be a part of the association, it's, you know, the royalties and the jersey sales that they share, and the money that you can essentially make, you know, as a part of being a part of this NFLPA. But in few cases, and in some cases they're very, very minute, but in this case it's very huge because of the player that is involved, and also too, as you said, being suspended, you know, for a year, and also too being reinstated, and now because the situation is very finicky, is this is a group of lawyers and former players that essentially have your back and want to fight for due diligence in the process against essentially the overlord, which is the NFL. And in this case, as you said, simply by having, you know, multiple resources and the largest resource he could possibly have, which is the NFLPA, which trumps Adrian Peterson's agent or any law firm that he could go out and individually have represent him, this group has collectively won in favor of their player.
Sure.
And that is what there's in some cases, every player that is a part of the, you know, either former player or current player NFLPA is, you know, is given that the fist pump, because the NFLPA fights for us as players and fights for our rights.
How much did you interact with the NFLPA in your day?
It wasn't so much with the NFLPA. It was with our team reps.
Who was your rep?
I think Nick Hardwick was one of our reps. Randall Godfrey was one of our reps. Keenan McCardell, those couple of years he was in San Diego, he was one of our reps.
He had the shoe cutting to relieve pressure on your feet.
Absolutely. Yes. It was the best. I learned it from him, as well as Randall Godfrey. But I think Aaron Rodgers was in Green Bay. Vernon Davis in San Francisco. And those, you facilitate your questions or concerns through those guys. They go to the direct source, which is the NFLPA, to get, you know, full clarification for any concern that you have. But that's very interesting. But then also, too, as you said, the dynamic with the agent dog-cussing the Vikings about my client not paying for them. And now it's a very, you know, the best, if not one of the best running backs, maybe sort of on the backside of his prime, could potentially be out on the market.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's a guy, he's got 2,346 career touches. He's had hamstring, groin, ankle, foot injuries just in 2013 alone. Also, the ACL turns 30 in 3 weeks. But listen, you think Jerry Jones wouldn't want him to play in Dallas? You think Adrian Peterson doesn't want to play in Dallas? He certainly could be there for this team, for the Dallas Cowboys. You know, somebody tweeted me asking if I thought, you know, would we make a play at AP to mentor Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell? I don't think so. I don't think you spend that kind of money on a guy like Adrian Peterson when you've got the two young backs here. I think you bring in a cheap veteran who can help kind of show him the ropes, but I don't think Adrian Peterson, to me, at this point in his career, is going to go someplace where he thinks he could win immediately, and you're not going to pay that money. If your organization is committed to winning in the long term, you're not bringing in a guy like Adrian Peterson who's just going to be a cap drain and an immediate, you know, an immediate, like he's a 1 or 2 year player at a high level who's going to cost a lot of money. That is not a long term philosophy. That's for a team that feels that it is an Adrian Peterson
window
away, right, in their window to win a Super Bowl.
Correct. And what's great, and we now know, you know, understanding the Browns' philosophy and the way they're building this roster with Ray Farmer at the helm. They feel like they have that young talent in that running back room, and that adding a veteran in some cases may be, as I said yesterday with Jim Donovan sitting in for you, the role that Josh McCown had for Mike Glennon in Tampa Bay. You know, kind of being, you know, in that room every day, accepting the role as a backup because of some injuries, but mentoring Mike Glennon to help that organization win some football games.
And the latest on Josh McCown, by the way, Vic Carucci, our friend Vic Carucci, and a lot of people out of Buffalo saying that the Bills and McCown are negotiating a contract that they think could be done as early as tomorrow.
Wow.
So it looks like Josh McCown could be headed to the Buffalo Bills when it's all said and done, not necessarily here to the Cleveland Browns. So, again, Josh McCown, veteran, guy who's had some success, especially 2 years ago in Chicago, had his best season there. Looks like he could end up in kind of that Kyle Orton role for the Buffalo Bills now that Orton was there 1 year and is done. Adrian Peterson, again, it's a victory for the NFLPA. We'll see what happens long-term and what it means. We are certainly happy to be back here with you in the Dog Bowl. And, again, we're asking today. A lot of mock drafts came out. Todd McShay's mock draft came out today. We'll talk about that. Josh Norris from Roto World, his mock draft came out today. It's McShay's version 3.0. There are things in there that I don't necessarily agree with, but it'll be interesting to get all of your take on that as whether or not you think what he did is the right thing. Again, we've got the comments and the sound from Mel Kiper Jr., but I think this is, again, an important draft for this team. You still have to get the quarterback position addressed, and whether that be the draft, free agency, a combination of both, or trade. I really think that the only true solution to the Browns is via a trade, whether that be a trade up in the draft, as Sean King at Yahoo, you know, conjectured that the Browns would move up from 12 to 5
yes.
to get Marcus Mariota, or whether that be a trade to bring in a guy like a Nick Foles or bring in a Mike Glennon. Not that they're long-term solutions, but they have the potential to be and are still cost-effective. They're not just 35-year-old Band-Aids like a Josh McCown. It would be a 35-year-old Band-Aid and a mentor to the younger quarterbacks.
It definitely
here.
Would. And the one thing that I've heard from multiple sources is the Cleveland Browns is the most exciting team to watch in the NFL draft, having two first-round draft picks and the most picks overall at 10. So, again, like you said, moving around with those picks, you know, acquiring, you know, talent that may not be through the draft, as you said, whether it be Nick Foles or someone else via trade, and also do future picks. If we saw that in Ray Farmer, the way he, you know, his ability to move back, still feel like he got what he wanted to get, the top player on the draft board, but acquiring another first-round pick for someone who wanted to jump up ahead of them. So I think everything is in play for the Cleveland Browns.
It's got to be. Mel Kiper will share his thoughts on what he thinks the critical things are for this Cleveland Browns team. Another thing I want to talk about at the top of the show is I would urge everybody to go to Monday Morning Quarterback, mmqb.si.com. Brandon Bostic wrote an article about his life experience since he blew that play. And, you know, it's come out, everybody do your job. He even talks about how as they lined up, Andrew Corliss was lined up right next to him and said, I got this guy, you've got that guy, you know your assignment. And he's like, yeah, I've got this. Says, I was supposed to block for Jordy Nelson, who was right behind me. We'd practiced this dozens, if not hundreds of times before, but when the ball appeared in front of me, just floating in the air, my mind went blank. I forgot everything I was supposed to do. The ball was in front of me. I wanted to grab it. I jumped up. I reached for it, and my life changed forever. And he gives this very honest account of everything that's happened for him since then. As you know, he's been cut by the Packers. He's now at the Minnesota Vikings. But from a Browns standpoint, here's something that was interesting. He said, it's weird how people know me for a play, but they don't know me as a person. I'm human. I made a mistake. I'm working my hardest to live with it and learn from it. In times of adversity, find out who really has your back. One guy in particular has been a huge help. His name is Ernest Biner. and you may know him as the running back responsible for the fumble, which cost the Browns the 1987 AFC title. Beiner called me out of the blue, and we now talk about once or twice a week. His biggest advice, face your mistake, don't run from it. So amazing to see Ernest Beiner. We've had on the show talking about his book. Reach out to Brandon Bostic in a similar situation and say, you know, listen, you can get on from this. You don't run from it. Accept it. It happened. And as Bostic described kind of that night, he was numb. It was kind of like a death in the family where you're numb. Your mind is blank. He said, I don't even remember really what I said that day or anything that happened after that moment.
And Nathan, I feel for him in some cases, but I don't in others. And the reason why I say that is I played that role essentially on every team that I was on. I was on the hands team, and my goal was not to touch the football. It was because I was a good decision maker, so they put me on the front line, and they knew I would be assignment sound and go get my guy. I was in his position in Green Bay, so very, very similar situation. And the one thing that I did not do is I never drew that blank. I was so associated with exactly what I wanted to do because I knew my career, like it is for him. And again, good, you know, props to him that he's got another opportunity somewhere else. But I knew that if I do my job, I can play in this league and play in it for a long time. And that's why that blank never drew in for me. And maybe it's because he's a young player and it's the first time he was in this situation. And there's been times where the ball's been kicked at me before, and I've had to avoid it, but still got my guy. So many situations to come into play, but I've been that guy. I know what he feels like when the ball is there, but it's just like, you got to do your job.
Well, you're not going
to
get praised if you catch it. They're still going to get mad at you even if you do catch it.
Absolutely. You're not the hero. He really wouldn't. He wouldn't have been the hero. You know, the Packer fans, that don't understand football might have been like, great job, you saved the game if you go and win it and you go to Super Bowl, but ultimately you're getting dog cussed by every coach because of the what if. And in this case, the what if happened. And it would have happened if 2 weeks later, they're in the Super Bowl, and in that same situation, I guarantee you he would not have been in that spot because he made the wrong decision even though he fielded the ball.
And let me ask you this, because he says, you know, he was surprised that he got cut, said I played 13 games, had a good season. More importantly, I knew I was improving. They said they had their guys, I didn't develop, blah, blah, blah. Said, I feel like there's more to it than that. With how close we were to reaching the Super Bowl, I think a lot of people in the organization couldn't live with me being there. I think seeing me would remind them of losing the NFC Championship. I think the Packers wanted a new start, so I got
100%.
One too.
100% agree. And if I was on that team or I was Aaron Rodgers, it could have come. I'm not putting Aaron Rodgers' name on it, but I'm saying if I were one of the star players that was in my prime that felt like you had a team that could go win another Super Bowl, and we'll put Aaron Rodgers.
Of course they could have.
We'll put Aaron Rodgers at the top of this. And again, I'm not saying that he has said this or any sources have said that either, but I'm saying him because he's in his prime. And as a quarterback in the National Football League, and we've had this conversation many, many times, he can throw, he can break Brett Favre's, passing records, but ultimately you're judged as the best quarterback in the National Football League based on the number of titles that you have. And I'm sure he can wholeheartedly feel inside that that team was going to go beat the New England Patriots and have an opportunity to get another ring. And they didn't because of that play.
Right, and you know how hard it is to get there, all the things that have to go right for a team to get to the Super Bowl, and this was a team that was on the cusp, that had gone into Seattle, that had beaten Seattle, basically, for all intents and purposes, in Seattle, and a lot of things happened in that game that were questionable down the stretch for the Packers, but this is the one that's going to stand out.
Yes.
And he was the easiest guy to move on from.
And
you can find a third tight end who can play special teams for you.
And it's a consistent, and I always say this a lot of times when there's when there's any type of drama, imagine a workplace or a relationship with someone that is constantly has a void, or there's that elephant in the room feeling, that eerie feeling about someone. Just imagine, again, in a workplace, and it's that he's a you work with someone in your cubicle next to you that you know is a sex offender or or has some troubled past or just got a DUI. It's like you don't want to talk about it. You look down on him because of it, because he brought something so negative upon you or your business or so on and so forth, and you have to deal with it every day. And in some cases, he's probably right. I 100% would agree with the fact that they just wanted to move on from him so they don't have to feel that void of what if every single day for the next 365 days.
You certainly don't want that. When we come back, we'll find out what the Browns do want in the draft, as Mel Kiper hosted his national conference call today talking all things draft and spent a lot of time, actually, on the Browns. We'll hear what he had to say about the Browns draft when we return on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.